Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, wire and ACH payments are an important part of any financial institution strategy, but with the clearinghouse's real-time payments rail and the Federal Reserve bringing their FedNow service online in 2023, organizations need to ask themselves how can these rails coexist and develop a roadmap that will allow them to be able to meet market demand. So to take a look at the ins and outs of the ecosystem and how organizations can be ready for the next round of innovation, I'm joined by Kevin Peck, Fiserv's Director of Product Management Enterprise Payments Platforms, and Steve Murphy, Mercator Advisor Group's Director of Enterprise and Commercial Payments Advisory Service. So there's certainly a lot of data and information to unpack on today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show. So Kevin and Steve, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. We're really going to be kind of taking a look at kind of some of the different payment types or the kind of comparing some of the different payment types, specifically around ACH and wire payments. Now, Kevin, to get this conversation going here, we've got this fantastic chart provided by your organization, Fiserv, that for those of you who are following along on paymentjournal.com, you're going to be able to view this payment type comparison chart in the article below. But Kevin, you know, perhaps maybe you could kind of pull out some of the interesting components here as it's really kind of comparing real-time, near real-time, and faster payments, specifically as it relates to ACH and wire payments.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So taking a look, starting with ACH, when we're looking at those ACH payments, it's really that file-based processing, huge volumes, but generally tend to be low in value. Think of your payroll transactions. ACH same day gives that ability for those funds to settle faster. So typically you're getting access within a day. It's got ubiquitous reach, can pretty much hit any account in the U.S. And with that movement of funds with same day, up to $100,000 in terms of the limit. If we move across to RTP, RTP is really bringing that 24/7, 365 processing to the table. So move funds whenever you want, wherever you want. Doesn't have the same type of reach, so reaching over about 50% of the accounts in the U.S. currently. And also comes with those transaction limits up to 100K. RTP also is bringing a very rich data schema in the ISO 20022 format and has a lot of value add messages built into the clearing structure as is, like the request for payment or request for information as examples. And then to kind of top it off with wire, wire is really that corporate use case. First and foremost, still king there, being able to move billions of dollars in a single transaction, being able to settle those funds in real time and get immediate access, really supporting cross-border use cases. FX use cases and moving those funds as quickly as possible for those corporates.
And the only the only thing I'd add there is that the expectation on the real-time payments and eventually FedNow and even same-day ACH is that the transaction limits are going to increase over the $100,000 limit that currently exists, which is going to spur on additional B2B payments use cases.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of next tier up is that $1 million. When we start getting into that $1 million threshold, things that would typically settle over wire, like a mortgage payment, are going to become quite attractive from an RTP perspective, as an example, being able to settle those payments.
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting point there in terms of the dollar volume kind of being, you know, rising here on some of these new payment rails. And so I think kind of that then leads to the question then, Kevin, you know, wires are obviously an important part of the financial institution strategy. And I think financial institutions are trying to understand how wires are going to coexist with the entry of the clearinghouse real-time payments and the FedNow service. Perhaps maybe you could kind of discuss how all of that's going to interplay with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Steve pointed out, those transaction limits look to be increasing in the future. But as it stands right now, the two sort of main limitations is that transaction limit up to 100K for real-time payments, as well as the ubiquity. So it doesn't necessarily have access to every account in the U.S. In comparison, wires is still going to be king of that corporate use case. So it can reach any account in the U.S. You can move millions or billions of dollars depending on the purpose of the payment or why you're initiating the transaction. In addition, wires really slots in to cross-border payments, being able to move funds internationally, whether it is a domestic payment with Fedwire and then moving to SWIFT. Or using correspondence to execute those transactions, as well as being able to handle things like FX rates with those payments. And really, that's all going to provide a lot of opportunity for banks to add value-add services And as a result, drive that revenue into their shop.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I might add here is that many listeners may not realize the extent to which wires sort of underpin, banking transaction, banking revenue. It's they're utilized in a wide variety of transactional use cases. And there's literally trillions of dollars of value exchange that moves along these rails every day. So in addition to what most people might know as B2B commercial payments for supplier invoices, wires are also used for bank reserve account requirements and Fed funds and repurchase agreements and trading account obligations and corporate client deposits and all sorts of liquidity needs and payroll and so forth. So they are really the predominant choice for initiating cross-border payments, as was just stated. Basically the same for domestic payments. So literally you're talking about trillions of dollars every day moving mm-hmm. across these rails.
Yeah, no, let's stick with that point there, the cross-border aspect of things. You know, as was kind of pointed out, a key component of wire transfer is corresponding banking and cross-border payments. So Kevin, what are the implications of wire transfer modernization on specifically cross-border payments?
Yeah, so the big thing that's on the horizon is the move to ISO 20022 for wires. And really what ISO 20022 is bringing a much richer data schema and a much more amount of structured information into the processing. That's going to have benefits for the bank as well as their customers. From a bank perspective, you're really going to be able to drive down those expenses. Better data, more structured data makes scanning for sanctions or fraud a lot easier, a lot more robust. It also makes handling those exception scenarios a lot more efficient. So you would expect those to decrease as we get into those richer data pieces. From a customer perspective, all that extra data is going to facilitate better reconciliation, again, driving down their costs to be able to manage their business with all of the payments that are coming in. From a customer perspective, the really big benefit across both the bank and the customer is all that extra information that's coming in, being able to take sort of rich data analytics and layer it on top as a value-add service to really drive better insights into those payments, how that money is moving, who you're doing business with, and open up new opportunities to go after.
So Kevin, are you expecting, I've read that potentially Fedwire and chips may be moving towards a 24-hour operating environment. Is that something you're hearing as well?
Something we're hearing, something we're waiting to see kind of pans out. With FedNow coming into the equation, that sort of interplay between FedNow and Fedwire in the future is going to be very interesting, especially if they're both based off the ISO 20022 format and have that interoperability. Generally, I think that's the next step in terms of payment, the ability to move 24/7, 365. I don't think that's going to stay restricted to real-time schemas like RTP. And in our experience from a global perspective, as those real-time schemes become more ubiquitous, become the fraud scanning becomes more robust to be able to keep up, those limits just increase over time.
You know, one of the things that I certainly find very interesting around the new, the real-time payments rail here is obviously, you know, as we discuss here, the ISO 20022. The Federal Reserve, you know, has not announced a target date yet for the high value migration to ISO 20022. However, we do know that they are still really kind of committed to this journey here. So, Kevin, from your perspective, really, where do we sit on this kind of journey roadmap?
Yeah, so for a long time, we were in limbo. And at the end of April, the Fed sort of given us more insight into what the near term looks like. The key thing to remember here is that SWIFT itself is going through its own modernization journey, moving to ISO 20022 format, and that's targeted to go live in November 22. With that as a backdrop, the Fed has announced that they're going to be making schema changes to support that interoperability for cross-border payments, rolling out in their legacy FAME format in November 22. And in that same announcement, they said they're still committed to that ISO 20022 conversion. That big bang approach going to that fully enriched ISO. Given the runway that the Fed has to get plans in place, the earliest we'd be looking at a move to ISO 20022 is sometime in 2023. But it's definitely ticked over from that holding pattern that we were in for quite a long time to the point where changes are now coming down the pipe that banks are going to have to start expecting and plan for. So talking about all of these changes with the Fed and modernization to ISO 20022, they're going to have a large impact on a bank's back office, but it's not necessarily the only impact that's in play right now. You've got to look at across the board, especially when we look at emerging payments like RTP and FedNow and how that lines up with your strategic approach for your customers. It may also be a simple fact that your back office operations can't support the type of business that you're trying to achieve anymore. And you need to recognize either greater efficiency or lower costs to be able to drive that out.
Yeah, and I would say that's an important point because the environment we're in now and have been for about 10 years is for net interest margins to be really squeezed, and banks more and more have to extract revenue from non-interest parts of the business and transaction banking. So very, very important to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just making the payment anymore. It's all of those value-add services that you can layer on top and charge for that really helps make up that difference.
Yeah, let's stick with that because I think that's a very interesting point because obviously as we kind of take a look at the journey roadmap here, obviously financial institutions are going to need to get ready for the ISO 20022 here. Excuse me. Now, so the question that I've really got to kind of around that then is, you know, is modernization of wire systems the progressive path to payments modernization? And if so, you know, really what are the steps to really consider?
Yeah, so definitely is, but isn't the only path. So an important driver for a bank is going to really understand sort of what is your internal use cases or business cases that are driving the change in your business. It might be RTP and the fact that that's an opportunity for you to really service your customers better. It might be cost takeout in your back office, or it might be these global changes with SWIFT and the move to ISO. And then the Fed following suit afterwards. So the first key piece there is you got to kind of figure out what does it mean to you? What's the use case that's driving change now? And what are the use cases in the future look like that'll drive a phase two, a phase three, a phase four? The thing that you then have to kind of layer on top of that is you got to be agile and have the ability to pivot as well. So these plans get announced long in advance, but they can get delayed. New things can happen. Like I said, we were driving to that November 22 date for SWIFT. The Fed then announced that they're going to have changes as well, meaning that your scope's now expanded. You essentially have your wire and SWIFT changes that have to go at the same time for that November 22 date. So being able to plan out, think about the future strategically, but then understand and have the flexibility to pivot if new requirements come up, or the requirements that laid out the initial plan change is going to be a key piece for it. And then the final part that you got to layer in is nobody goes in and renovates their entire back office in one shot. It is very progressive. You're going to start small, and then you want to layer on capabilities over time. So again, based on that key business driver, you might start focusing on RTP as your use case, wire as your use case, and getting ready for those changes. And then as you continue working through those phases, you can add on new pay types, FedNow, RTP as examples, or continue expanding into new opportunities, maybe taking Fedwire and layering in SWIFT processing as an example.
So, Kevin, since you guys have such a diverse and wide customer base at the intersection of a lot of different processes and systems, what are you seeing in terms of the progress here in terms of modernization, and is there a substantial difference between asset size banks, asset class size banks?
I think everybody's on the journey for modernization. The substantial difference is the starting point in sort of what we see in our customer base. The key is that banks are looking for that partner, that flexibility to be able to help them meet their needs. And that's really what we focus on, is helping address based on those key drivers that I talked about before, really understanding that with our clients and then sort of bringing the appropriate solution to the table to help them realize the strategic vision that they're after.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about the payment type comparison and as it relates to businesses and things that they should be considering as we start to move towards these new real-time payment rails here. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Yeah, thanks very much. Really
thanks
appreciate it.
Yep.